This is VOA News. I'm Michael Brown. Republicans in the U.S. House of Representatives pushed through a $14.5 billion military assistance package for Israel without humanitarian aid for Gaza. We get more on this story from AP correspondent Norman Hall.
The measure passed mainly along party lines.
On this vote, the yeas are 226, the nays are 196. The bill is passed.
In a partisan approach by new Speaker Mike Johnson, the emergency package requires offsets with cuts in government spending elsewhere. Such a bill would normally have full bipartisan support. Democrats said Johnson's approach will only delay help for Israel. Senate Majority Leader Chuck Schumer calls the bill stunningly unserious and says it has no chance in the Senate. President Joe Biden has said he will veto it. Norman Hall, Washington.
More Americans with dual citizenship have left the Gaza Strip as the nation's top diplomat headed to the Middle East for more talks on the Israel-Hamas war. AP Washington correspondent Sagar Magani has the story.
After global sympathy, Israel now faces criticism over its full-fledged military response in Gaza, which makes Blinken's visit more complex. He'll again stress U.S. backing for Israel's need to defend itself, but
how Israel does this matters.
Noting images of Palestinian children pulled from the rubble of airstrikes.
That hits me in the gut as much as seeing a child in Israel or anywhere else.
Blinken says he'll discuss concrete steps to protect Palestinian civilians. He'll also introduce a new priority.
We're focused on the day of. We also need to be focused on the day after.
And the need for Israel and its neighbors to start considering what a post-war Gaza looks like. Sagar Magani, Washington.
And for more news, please join us at voanews.com. This is VOA News. The United States is providing up to $425 million in additional military aid for Ukraine in a package expected as soon as Friday, two U.S. officials tell VOA. The U.S. has provided about $44 billion in security assistance to Ukraine since the beginning of Russia's unprovoked invasion back in February of 2002. Make that 2023. Leading artificial intelligence developers have agreed to work with governments to test new frontier models before they are released to help manage the risk of rapidly developing technology. Reuters correspondent Rachel Faber reports it's a potentially landmark achievement at the United Kingdom's Artificial Intelligence Summit.
Like-minded governments and AI companies have today reached a landmark agreement.
British Prime Minister Rishi Sunak on Thursday hailed an agreement between leading AI developers and governments to test new artificial intelligence models before they are released. He said the accord on the final day of his two-day AI safety summit would help to manage the risks of the rapidly developing technology and protect humanity from the potential threat it poses.
The late Stephen Hawking once said, AI is likely to be the best or worst thing to happen to humanity. If we can sustain the collaboration that we have fostered over these last 2 days, I profoundly believe that we can make it the best. Because safely harnessing this technology could eclipse anything we have ever known.
The list of countries that had signed up to the safety testing collaboration did not include China.
Rachel Faber of Reuters says that China's representatives were not included in the second day of talks. Unionized workers at the first of the Ford factories that went on strike last month have overwhelmingly approved a new contract proposal. South Korea says North Korea has likely supplied several types of missiles to Russia to support its war in Ukraine, along with its widely reported shipments of ammunition and shells. Foreign governments accuse North Korea of seeking high-tech Russian technologies to modernize its arsenal of nuclear weapons in return. Meanwhile, in an apparent sign of its economic troubles, the country is moving to close some of its overseas diplomatic missions. A New York jury convicted FTX founder Sam Bankman-Fried of fraud charges. The 31-year-old California man convicted Thursday by jurors who rejected his testimony that he didn't defraud customers. He was extradited from the Bahamas, where he operated the FTX cryptocurrency exchange. I'm Michael Brown, VOA News.
Good morning, Africa. Welcome to Daybreak Africa from the Voice of America. I'm James Barty in Washington. Today is Friday, November 3rd, and here are some of the stories we are covering. As dual citizens leave Gaza, the U.S. continues to call for humanitarian pause in the Israel-Hamas war.
We believe that a general ceasefire would benefit Hamas in providing them breathing space and time to continue to plot and execute attacks on the Israeli people.
We'll talk with a former UN diplomat for historical context with the Israeli-Palestinian conflict, who decides the renewal of the East African Community Forces mission in the DRC. Germany's president asks for forgiveness for his country's colonial abuses in Tanzania. Zambia's government revokes retirement benefits and privileges for former President Edgar Lungu.
The law provides that a former president who engages in active politics ceases to enjoy the benefits of a former president.
And Sierra Leone marks the International Day to End Impunity for Crimes Against Journalists. The stories plus Samson O'Malley's sports are coming up on Daybreak Africa.
The spokesman for the White House.
Dozens of people who are dual citizens of the United States and other countries were able to cross from Gaza into Egypt on Thursday. Officials in Washington are expressing hope that all the estimated 400 American families desiring to get out of the area will be able to very soon. Meanwhile, as VOA's chief national correspondent Steve Herman reports from Washington, American officials are calling for a humanitarian pause, but not a ceasefire.
People, they don't have any, what I call, institutional memory, understand? The problem is, unless the United States and Europe change it.
The spokesman for the White House National Security Council, John Kirby, told reporters on Thursday a ceasefire would not be in the best interest of Israel.
We believe that a general ceasefire would benefit Hamas in providing them breathing space and time to continue to plot and execute attacks on the Israeli people. A humanitarian pause, when we talk about that, it is temporary, localized, and focused. Focused on a particular objective or objectives. Humanitarian aid in, people out.
Kirby, facing questioning from reporters, declined to criticize Israel's bombing of a refugee camp in Gaza, which some UN officials contend might constitute a war crime as a large number of civilians were killed or wounded. The NSC spokesman said the Israelis are making efforts to minimize civilian casualties, but they are still causing them, and that, he says, is tragic. Steve Herman, VOA News, Washington.
Israeli forces encircled Gaza City on Thursday in their assault on Hamas. Meanwhile, according to Reuters, the death toll rose dramatically as the calls for a ceasefire to allow humanitarian aid into Gaza have gotten louder. Ambassador James Jonah is a former United Nations diplomat who oversaw the Middle East for 25 years. He tells me that the only way the Israeli-Palestinian dispute can be resolved is for the UN Security Council to carry out its responsibility under the UN Charter. But he says this will not happen unless the United States and Europe change their position.
People, they don't have any, what I call, institutional memory, understand? The problem is unless the United States and Europe change their position, nothing will happen.
What position should they be taking at this point now?
Well, the problem, the UN requires that people take the interest mainly of the United Nations and its charter. They're not doing it now. And you can see that last Friday, the membership got so angry that they took the matter to the General Assembly. The vote was 121 against 14. It tells you a lot. And they called for ceasefire. Even stronger, they called for a truce, a durable truce. They called for the transfer of humanitarian support. And even to end the siege. Just imagine that your country has been closed. You cannot get food, water, fuel for 21 days. It's incredible. But this is the nature of the UN, because the Israelis announced that they will not do it. They don't care what the UN says. But the only way you can deal with that kind of defiance is for the Security Council to act. There is no way the U.S. and the rest could act. The U.S. will veto it because it's politically very dangerous for the U.S. to allow such things to go through against Israel. That's it.
Where does Africa fit now at this level? What can Africa do?
You see, the Africans, by and large, they are pro-Palestine. They haven't been for a long time because they compare the issue of self-determination with their own. Everybody knows it. What you have is a lot of pressure on them, okay? And many of them economically are very weak, so they do it. But in the case of the voting, no, they all came on board because they just don't understand how you can starve people.
Of course, Ambassador, it was Hamas that attacked Israel, which led to this.
Yes, that's what they said, but that's wrong. That is why the Secretary General was attacked, because he said, and correctly, that the attack of the 7th of October should not be seen in a vacuum, okay? And he gave the reasons why. You should listen to what he said. He talked about 56 years of occupation. He talked about the fact that the Gaza has been under siege more or less for 17 years. It gives you all. And for that, that was an abomination to the Israeli delegation. They attacked him. They asked him that he must resign. But luckily, the members of the assembly said no. He should be commended for what he said. But there is no way the Israelis will forgive him for saying these things publicly. No. You see, that's why I said the UN has changed.
Ambassador, Israel says it wants to root out Hamas from Gaza.
That's not possible. They know it's not possible. Let me tell you, as I said, I was 25 years. I worked with many prime ministers. Most of those prime ministers belong to what you call the Labour Party. That is based from the founder of Israel, Ben-Gurion. They were very liberal people, okay? They want to leave with the Palestinians, but the Palestinians were rejecting them because they said this is their land. The first Likud prime minister was Begin. He took over in 76. Their view is different from the Labour Party. Their view is that the entire area belongs to the Jews, given to them by God.
Ambassador James Jonah is the former UN Undersecretary General for Political Affairs. He was speaking with us from New York City. The Secretary General of the East African Community, Peter Matuki, says the renewal of the Regional Forces Mission in the Democratic Republic of Congo will be up to the Heads of State Summit later this month. This comes as Kinshasa indicates that it is now ready to renew the troops' mandate. Moses Javier Rimana has the story.
The mandate of the forces of the East African Community is expected to expire in December, and Kinshasa has been reluctant to renew it, expressing dissatisfaction with the mission. Dr. Peter Matuki, the Secretary General of the East African Community, says that it will be up to the heads of state to renew or not.
The decision of renewal is solely a decision of the summit, because the East African Regional Force is a creation of the summit, and it is them who mandates them to take up responsibilities.
The deployment of the regional forces is met with mixed reactions from the citizens and the government of the Democratic Republic of Congo, as President Felix Tshisekedi himself openly accuses the regional force of not executing its mandate. Congolese lawmaker Dorothy Masirika agrees.
I cannot say that the EAC force do enough in the eastern of DRC because they have a challenge to know the region. I think they can help if they work closely with the FRDC. The return of peace in DRC can help the DRC refugees to come back home and contribute to the development of our country.
About 2.8 million children are now displaced in the Democratic Republic of Congo, accounting to 40% of the total number of displaced people. Their numbers have risen to 6.9 million from 5 million in July, according to the latest data from the UN Displacement Tracking Matrix. About 80% of those internally displaced are in the eastern provinces of Tanganyika, North Kivu, South Kivu, and Ituri. Frank Walusimbi is the Associate Communications Officer of the UNHCR in Uganda. He says that underfunding is affecting their response.
There is 500,000 Congolese refugees in the country. The figure constitutes 31.9% of the refugee population in Uganda.
In the Democratic Republic of Congo, more than 5% of children are now displaced as conflict forces a record number of people from their homes. With renewed clashes between the DRC forces and the M23 since last month, the stabilization of the eastern part of the country is still far from being achieved. Moses Havyarimana, VOA Africa, Arusha, Tanzania.
You're listening to Daybreak Africa on the Voice of America. I'm James Barton in Washington. Today is Friday, November the 3rd. For more African news and features, visit our website at voaafrica.com. Connect with us on all social media platforms. We are on Facebook, Twitter, and Instagram. And still to come on our program, Samson O'Malley Sports. Zambia's Minister of Information says the government of President Hakainde Hichilema is not threatened by the return to active politics of former President Edgar Lungu. Yesterday, the government revoked the retirement benefits and privileges that had been granted to the former president. Minister Cornelius Mwitwa tells me that the revocation of benefits and privileges was done in accordance with Zambian law.
Well, first of all, it is not a revocation of his retirement benefits. It is by operation of law. The law, particularly at Section 5, provides that a former president who engages in active politics ceases to enjoy the benefits of a former president, such as a salary, which is 80% of the current president's salary, and other such entitlements, state security, and so on. And this law has been in place for decades.
So, Mr. Minister, what do you say to those Zambians who think that your government feels very threatened by the return of the former president to active politics? Otherwise, they say, why have you been blocking the former president from engaging in certain political activities?
Well, first of all, no one in government is afraid of the return of the former president because his legacy speaks miles ahead of him. Under his administration, the country was left plunged in a crippling, unsustainable debt to the international community, which by 2020, Zambia as a country began to default on meeting its international balance of payment obligations. And all that local debt is hovering on the heads of the current government. This is a president whose leadership was rejected by the people of Zambia primarily due to political violence which was escalating in the country, issues to do with plunder of resources, corruption, and failure to prudently utilize the resources of the state, such as purchasing of armored vehicles. So his legacy is well known.
That's why Zambians elected President Hakainde Hichilema. But now some Zambians are saying your government is probably doing worse than the former President Lungu's government.
The people who are expressing those sentiments, first of all, the question should be, who are those people? It is the people who are supporters of the former ruling party, or those who are aligned, the TF surrogates. They are the ones who are saying that President HH's administration is the worst.
Are you not concerned that the removal of President Lungu's benefits will set a precedent for a possible tit-for-tat?
Not at all. This is not a political move by government. And that is why, if you have checked the citizens, including the Patriotic Front, no one has said, why have you done so? Because this law has always been known that a former president involved in active politics is not entitled to benefits of a former president as by law established. So if government had failed to invoke this provision of the law, the government itself would have been culpable of breaking the law.
Cornelius Mwitwa is Zambia's information minister. He was speaking with us from the capital, Lusaka. German President Frank-Walter Steinmeier has asked for forgiveness for his country's colonial abuses in Tanzania. Historians estimate that over 300,000 members of the indigenous Tanzanian population were killed when they resisted German occupation. Generale Mwili Mwangu is a renowned East African writer and lawyer. He tells viewers Jackson Munganyi the Tanzanians have long advocated for compensation and the repatriation of human remains housed in German museums.
They came in during the period of the scramble for Africa, and especially after King Leopold II of Belgium had organized a conference in Berlin, which was originally called the Congo Conference. It was supposed to be a conference that was going to divide among the African, the European rivalries, vying for spaces to colonize.
And what were some of the notable uprisings or rebellions or resistance movements against German colonial rule in East Africa?
In East Africa, you had a rebellion in the southeast Tanzania, Tanganyika rather, because Tanzania was not yet born, it was not known. It was the southeast of the German East Africa colony. Then there was a rebellion in the southern highlands of latter-day Tanganyika, which is, was around the Hehe land, the country around Iringa, Mbeya, Morogoro, and then the southwest Tanganyika.
So President Walter Steinmeier of Germany has asked for forgiveness for those atrocities. What does this apology mean for Tanzanians and Tanzanian tribes that were affected?
I think what is most important about this apology is the fact that the German people now realize that what they committed against the people of these areas were atrocities, they were crimes against humanity, and they needed to make an apology. I think that is the most important thing, because the recognition that these acts constitute crimes against humanity is a way of guaranteeing that we don't go back to that era ever again. But on the other hand, also, on the part of those who would fall victims, to refuse to succumb to such deprivations and atrocities that are imposed by an outside force.
Generale Mwili Mwangu is a renowned East African writer and lawyer. He was speaking with viewers Jackson Vunganyi. Yesterday, Thursday, was the International Day to End Impunity for Crimes Against Journalists. The Committee to Protect Journalists says the persistent lack of justice for murder reporters is a major threat to press freedom. Asma James is a Sierra Leonean media personality and advocate with over 20 years of experience in broadcast journalism and management. She talks to viewers David Vandy about how journalists in Sierra Leone commemorated the day.
We are happy that the United Nations actually have a day for us journalists as we do our job, because already, as you know, there are journalists across the world who are suffering with impunity while doing their job. I was looking at some statistics, and it's really terrible to see that across the world, we have journalists, 9 out of 10 are killed, and these killings remain unresolved. So we are concerned. But back home in Sierra Leone, we mark this day, we reflect on this day, and we in Sierra Leone, we are lucky that we have not had any situation wherein a journalist is being killed while doing his or her job. So, but journalists in Sierra Leone is journalists everywhere, and we are all journalists. We are concerned about journalists across the world who are suffering and who are being killed without the issues being resolved.
President Julius Maada Bio recently signed a law revising Sierra Leone's 1965 Public Order Act to remove measures that criminalize publications deemed libelous or seditious. And the theme for this year is protecting journalists, protecting truth. Do you, as a journalist, see the protection of journalists and truth around you in your country?
So it depends on who you talk to, but generally, as a journalist, and I've been in this for the last 20 years, we enjoy relatively peaceful as journalists as we do our work. And then the issue we are having in Sierra Leone more is, you know, the new media is affecting the whole of the journalist community. So when once someone writes online or sends out an audio and people think these are journalists, but as journalists and since the appeal of this Part 5 of the Public Order Act, we've had relatively peaceful way of practicing our job in Sierra Leone. And again, the Sierra Leone Association of Journalists Large, of which I am a proud member, has been working tirelessly to make sure that journalists work within the confines of the law. There may be challenges here and there, but when you look at generally on the whole, I think we enjoy freedom as journalists doing our work in Sierra Leone.
Asma James is founder and chief executive of Rise Radio 96.3 FM in Freetown, Sierra Leone. She spoke with viewers David Vandy. It's time now for Daybreak Africa Sports, and here is Samson O'Malley in Abuja, Nigeria. A very good Friday morning to you, Samson.
Good Friday morning to you too, James. We begin the sports in Uganda, where Belgian tactician Paul Poot has been unveiled as the new head coach of Uganda national men football team. The 67-year-old was handed a 2-year deal and will replace Milutin Seredejovic, who parted ways with the Federation of Uganda Football Association in September this year. Coach Poot has vast knowledge of African football, having worked as head coach of the Gambia, Burkina Faso, Gabon, Kenya, Guinea, and Congo.
Everything I will do will be based on my experience in Africa and in other countries, in Europe, and also in clubs where I have been working. We need and want order and discipline. I am a very ambitious person, and when I sign for a country, it's to obtain results.
The first task for Paul Poot will be the upcoming 2026 FIFA World Cup qualifiers, where Uganda will face Guinea and Somalia, with both games to be played in Morocco. In basketball news, qualifying matches for the road to the Basketball Africa League 2024 continued on Thursday in the West Division Elite 16, as reigning Moroccan champions FUS Rabat slumped to a surprising 73-66 loss against ESLAC of Guinea-Conakry in their final Group B game. But despite the setback, Rabat became the first team to qualify for Saturday's semifinals as they finished with a 2-1 mark. ESLAC's win, their first in the qualifiers, no doubt sees them with a win out of 3 games, but they will be on the next flight home. Al-Hakli Benghazi topped Group A after beating BC Verugua 84-73 points on Thursday and become the second team to advance to the semifinals. In other results, Bangui's Sporting Club of the Central African Republic earned a hard-fought 83-70 win against ABC Fighters of Cote d'Ivoire late on Thursday. And now to boxing, where Anthony Joshua may likely fight mixed martial art former champion Francis Ngannou. Boxing promoter Eddie Hearn has revealed he's eyeing Ngannou as a future opponent to take on Anthony Joshua in the boxing ring. The Cameroonian professional mixed martial artist made his professional boxing debut on Sunday, facing Tyson Fury in a heavyweight showdown in Saudi Arabia. In athletics, double Olympic 800 meters champion Caster Semenya says her focus is now more about winning battles against the authorities than collecting medals. Semenya was born with differences of sexual development, DSD, and cannot compete in female track events without taking testosterone-reducing drugs. The South African wants to hold World Athletics to account for discrimination against athletes with hyperandrogenism. And that's it for this Friday's edition of Daybreak Africa Sports. I am Samson O'Malley in Abuja, Nigeria. It's back to you, James, in Washington.
Thank you, Samson. Have a nice weekend. And that's it for this Friday, November 3rd edition of Daybreak Africa. We thank you for spending your week with us. On behalf of the Daybreak Africa team, I am James Barton, Washington, wishing you a great weekend. We'll see you again on Monday morning.